Yin, I want to throw a quick question out to the tzibur. I'm just taping this. If you want to get on while you're Torah, you can feel free to say whatever you got, and we'll give you a little shidduch shout out. We call it. We'll say your name, and then whoever listens to it, all the girls listen to it.
That's hilarious.
So we'll be able to. Okay. Anyways, if I say the word, the name Tisha B'Av, what pumps in your mind right away? What pops in your mind? Beis Hamikdash. Okay. Good. Destruction. How about more personal? Morning. Okay. I don't get your name. What's your name?
Yossi.
Yossi what? Yossi Blumenfeld. Gotcha, Yossi. Okay.
Reflection.
Good. What else?
Sorrow.
Holocaust.
Sorrow. Okay, Holocaust. We throw a Holocaust. Usually one of the keynotes in there.
9 days.
9 days. Ending the 9 days. True. You drove me to the... I had a crown, right?
Yeah, you made fun of my car.
I made fun is a strong word. I was commenting on the car. I wasn't making fun of it.
I was a good driver.
Excellent driver. I was in Chicago. A few months ago. I don't know. Half a year ago, maybe. Good time. Okay. Anyways. Usually, I would expect someone to say maybe hungry. Get very hungry. You're, it's a long day. You can't sit. You sit on the floor a lot. Tisha B'Av for many of us is usually it's a camp experience. I don't know how sad you get on Tisha B'Av, but most people don't get that sad. We're supposed to be sad. You know, it could be we watch sad movies, but we're not exactly sitting there and we sit on the floor. We try to go through the process and the motion of being sad. But we're really just looking at our clock and hoping that the 12 o'clock hits so I can sit in the chair finally. And then I watch the movies that the camp shows me afterwards and I take a nice long nap. Maybe play some video games on my phone. Next thing I know, it's already almost over. We don't really go through a process, though, often, that is, I don't feel like I'm missing much. We know, we talk about it all the time. Beis HaMikdash, you mentioned it, we're mourning, but though we talk about it, I don't know how much we actually feel it. I know personally myself, maybe I should clap al chayt in this one, I don't feel it so much pretty regularly, even though I go to the kollel, we have all these nice keynotes that happen, it's hard. Now, why is that a problem? Why should I be sad? Why should one be sad? Okay, there was a temple that was built a long time ago that we've never seen, or anyone else we've ever seen in their lives. It's not here anymore. Why should I be sad? Yeah.
To commemorate the loss.
Okay, but what loss do I feel? What personally do I feel?
You don't feel any loss because it's not you weren't alive for the actual base. I mean, that's supposed to feel.
I mean, you're right. We're supposed to feel lost, but how am I supposed to feel lost if I can't connect to it?
I feel connected and try to feel how good days were back in the day.
Okay, fine. But it sounds like it's such a historical event, and you're correct. I should try, but it sounds like it's so far removed from me. What do you say, Ali?
You no longer feel all mitzvahs in the Torah.
Okay, so if I was a real mitzvah observant Jew, I want all 613, whatever it means I could do possibly. So I'm missing some. I can't give korbanos now, the things I can't do right now. So if I was a mitzvah-oriented person, and I can't do a mitzvah, I'd feel upset about that. Okay, Ezra, yeah.
So there are also like many things like you wouldn't get sick, like some things that actually would hit them off, like things like you wouldn't get sick as often, and like people, like everyone would be like assimilated, like things that like are actually like relevant to us.
Okay, so you're pointing out there were things that may have happened back in the day that we no longer can experience, and that's a frustrating thing for us.
Like, sick, or you can like really think like oh, for like, the times of like the but I mean, there's
Would it be a different existence? Meaning, would it be different in that area? Could I not daven to this day still for my relative who's sick?
No, you could, but it would be more like...
This basic picture is right there, so it's a little easier to get the channel, that energy up to the Shemayim, you're saying.
Yeah, and you have the
Neviim. The Neviim, okay. There were parts where I had the Neviim, it's true. That those Neviim maybe could guide me and help us along the way. Okay, that's true also. That's true, yeah.
Also, like, less fighting stuff.
So there, it should have been that way. It should have been a centered area where we all kind of meeting together, even though we know that one of the things that destroyed the Beis HaMikdash was internal fighting. But in theory, it should have worked that way. It's true. It's true. So I'll tell with you something I think is makes sense to me, at least. You have an answer?
I was just going to say, like, all your sins can get cleansed on the daily. Like you can
by giving korbanos.
Yeah.
By giving korbanos. Okay. The truth is nowadays also, if you do tshuva, right now, if you would do tshuva, and you mean it, it's probably will be cleansed also, but we wouldn't notice it. We don't see the Shemayim taking our fires, taking our korban, so it's a little hard to tell, but even today, many of those things still exist. I'll tell you what, at least for me, gave a little comfort to me. When you hear someone else, like a great rabbi, or you read the books, you mention Beis HaMikdash, things like that, you mention the stories of what could happen when it was going on back then, when you hear those stories, even though I don't really relate to them so much personally myself, I never saw them, nor did I ever meet anyone who ever saw them themselves. But there's a level of, if someone appreciates those things that they said it was great, I have to assume it was great also. I'll tell you a quick story. It was a story I saw in a sefer called Zahav Mishpah by Moshe Shmuel Shapira, who was Rosh Yeshiva Be'er Yaakov many years ago. And he said the following story. He told over, and I looked for it since I have not found it in years I've been looking for it, but I know I found it there the first time, so I believe it's still there. He told over the story that there was a person one time who was bidding. They were doing bidding in shul. You know, I'm sure in your shuls also, sometimes they bid for certain kibudim. And the kavod for opening up the aron for ne'ilah on Yom Kippur is one of the high-ranking kibudim that gets a lot of money usually. And it was a community that had a few wealthy individuals. One of them was a famous Baron Rothschild. And when Sikha for Ne'ilah that year opened up, he started the bidding high. And there was some guy who was there also very well-to-do who started bidding up. And they had this big bidding debate. You know, I'll make it, even though it wasn't dollars, I'll use dollars. You know, $50,000. $75,000, the next guy bids. Ooh, in the crowd. $100,000. All of a sudden, this guy bidding against Baron Rothschild says, $250,000, $250,000 to bid to open up the Aron for Psycha for Ne'ilah. So, like, you know, hush, never hitting that close to that high. Hush falls over the crowd. Going once, going twice. Sold to the man in the second row with the hat on. Everyone's congratulating him. What a great honor. Such charitable amount of money you gave. And he goes to the guy next to me, goes, thank you so much for the shikoch, but I have one question. There's a guy who just bought it. So the guy next to him, I have one question to ask you, says the guy next to him. He says, what's psicha? What's that? You just spent $250,000 to buy something you don't even know what it was? He says, I have no idea what it is, but I know one thing, is that Baron Rothschild, usually he invests well. And if he felt this was worth a lot of money, then I'm assuming he's right. I also want that. It happens to be, there are times in life when you're not going to feel anything yourself. You will not be sad. You're not going to feel lost. You're going to talk about it. We can throw their names around. Destruction, Beis HaMikdash, the Holocaust. We'll throw whatever words we've heard. But it might not hit us so hard at home. It might not feel so close to it. That's okay. Because if you know someone else who you respect and you value, look at your rabbis, and you'll see them, you know, I remember one time I sat with my brother-in-law. We had the Suda Masekas before Tisha B'Av, and he was like crying while he was eating food. He was crying. You know, I know he's supposed to feel sad, but like, brings up to tears. He's not an actor. He was legitimately crying while he was eating Suda Masekas. I was shocked. If someone that we appreciate, we value them, and they feel this terrible loss, for whatever reason, maybe all the reasons that you guys mentioned before, and even if I don't feel it, but I believe it because they feel it, that could be sufficient. That could be enough. That's at least the beginning part, to start for us, to start to feel what a loss really means. But the biggest challenge that we have sometimes is we don't know, our priorities are a little bit off. There are times we really don't know exactly, you know, the right priority. So we look at people who know priorities better than we do. I'll tell you also a story. And this is one of the most important things, especially nowadays. We live in a world nowadays when people are crazy. People say crazy things. They do crazy things. If you try to speak against them, then you get in a lot of trouble. You know, recently I heard a story of a professor in England. I don't want to get political over here, and I'm, you know, this is not, this is what I believe, but I'm not going to get a discussion about the topic. But the professor in England who was fired 4 months ago for putting down the gender of his students in class for what they were born with. If you're born as a male, he write down that you are a male. He got fired for that 4 months ago. Because there are people in this class who identify themselves as females and they know they're born males. And what right do you have to decide their gender? They can pick what gender they have. I don't want to discuss the topic. My only point is that we live in a crazy world. We live in a crazy world. And our priorities sometimes are so, they're so off that we can't even figure, like, we don't know what to feel. So sometimes if you find someone out there who you look up to and you respect, and they feel a certain thing, you know what? It's probably good that you feel that also. You should try to follow that person's lead. When I was younger, anyone here ever hear of a baseball player named Cal Ripken Jr.? Yep. Okay, so I'm a Baltimore Oriole fan. Growing up, I was an Oriole fan. So anyone here have his rookie card? No, okay, so I do, but mine is a huge hole right in the middle of it. Why? Because he was a future star. And there were three people on the card. It was Cal Ripken Jr., I forget the other guy's name, and a guy named Jeff Schneider. My father's name is Jeff Schneider. My mom thought it was funny. So she took the card, she pinned it on my wall, and I have hanging my wall Jeff Schneider, my father's name, and Calvin Jr., the same card. It's not my dad. He's not a baseball player, but he had the same name as a baseball player. So hanging in my walls like is like is this card in my like in my bulletin board, whatever, like my that, that I don't know what it's called anymore, but they had those bullet those thing where you used to put those pins in. Whatever they're called. What's that? Bulletin board it's called? What's it called? Cork board. Okay, maybe that's what it's called. I don't know what it's called. But either way, hanging in my room in Maryland where I grew up is a card with a hole in it that could be worth, I don't know how much it's worth, but it's worth a lot of money, but now it's not anymore. Why? Because my mom's priority was that the name of my father is hanging on my wall. Now, if I was a person who cared about money more, then I'd be upset about that, and I wish that I would have had a mint condition card. It all depends on what you care about in life. If you care about certain things, if you have priorities in the right in a certain way, then these things would mean a lot to you. If you don't care about those things, they don't mean a lot to you. So for us, it's probably very hard for us to mean a lot. The basic reason is not here anymore. It's hard for us to feel that way. That's okay. You don't have to feel that way yourself. But if you know people who do feel that way, and you respect them and you care about them, then that could be a level of mourning. But I want to take it a step further. I want to tell us maybe why we really should feel a level of a loss. Anyone here have ever gone through a religious challenge, a belief challenge in their life? Does God care? Does God exist? What am I supposed to do here? You have. Of course. Probably almost all of us have. You know what would happen if this mikvah was here right now? You know what would happen? You'd walk to the base of mikvah area, and you'd watch a fire come from heaven and consume your korban. Every question that you had, is there a God? Does he care about me at all? In a second, it's gone. You walk in and you see miracle after miracle taking place in this area, the base of mikvah area, only about a 45-minute, an hour drive from here maybe. You drive an hour. You'd walk into places with miracles happening daily. Every question you have about religion is out the window afterwards. I believe it. If anyone here has ever woken up in the morning and questioned, "Ugh, do I have to get up to Minyan today? You know, or does God really care if I put my tzitzis on or where it's filling?" Or if you've ever questioned that, mean that right now you are at a terrible loss as a Beis HaMikdash anymore. Because one walk into that area would change everything for us. And we don't get it. We don't feel it. Anyone here ever read Stephen King novels? Anyone like Stephen King? Yeah, a little bit. So there's a short stories that he has. I think it was called Night Shift, but it turned into a movie called Cat's Eye. I don't know if anyone's ever heard of it. It's like when I was much younger, it was like already old. So it's like well before you were around. But they had, and the book that you wrote, and they made this into part of the story in the movie, it was a book called Quitters Incorporated. It was about a guy who it was, well, I'll get to it right now. I'll tell you the story quickly, a very brief story. This guy was stuck in smoking. He smoked all the time. Regular cigarettes, nothing more than that. Regular cigarettes. Now smoking is different, mashmaos, but back in the day, it was just regular cigarettes. He smoked cigarettes, and his life was like falling apart. His wife and him fought all the time. She hated that he smoked. And his job was like, you know, the boss didn't like him at all. And his kids didn't like him. And everything was wrong. His life was falling apart. And one day, he gets into a fight with his wife, and tough day at work. And he goes to a bar to get to drink a little bit. And he sees a friend of his from high school there. The friend says, "New, what's going on in your life?" He didn't say the word new, but "What's going on in your life?" And he said, "Things are terrible." And he sees the guy smoking. So the friend says to him, "You should know, yeah, I see you're smoking a lot. I used to also smoke all the time. It destroyed things in my life. And I stopped." And the guy's like, "I would love to stop. You know, I wish I could stop, but I can't. I'm stuck in it." He says, "I also was stuck in it, but I went to this place called Quitters Incorporated. Changed my life forever. Here's a business card. Think about it. It might really do a service for your family, for your job, for your children, everything. I recommend it highly." He puts it in his pocket. He's like, "Whatever, I'll get to it later." Goes home that night. He fights the wife again. Next day, his boss gets angry. Things are terrible. He decides, "You know what? I'm going to show up at this place, Quitters Incorporated." He goes to this place, Quitters Incorporated, finally. He walks into this alley. There's a door there, Quitters Incorporated on the sign on top. He walks inside, and he sees, it's like a fish tank, and the secretary, you maybe fill out this paperwork. And they call him in 5 minutes later. They say, "Rule number one with our, you know, we have 95% success rate. Rule number one is that whatever we do and our methods can never be repeated. It's confidential. You have to sign a confidential, you know, waiver. Happy to sign it." He goes, "Okay, come inside. We'll tell you the whole process." They bring him inside. They say to him, "Here's how it works. The very first time we ever catch you smoking, we're going to go to your house. We're going to take your wife. And we're going to put her in this room. And this is a big window here. And there's a cat in the room right now. There's a cat. Pushes a button. All of a sudden, and then the floor starts to like become electrocuted. And the cat's hopping around. His hair's getting all frizzy. 10 seconds later, That's your wife the first time that you smoke. The next time that you smoke, we go to your find your kid and we break his arm. The next time that you smoke, we cut your wife's fingers off. And they go on and so forth. And this guy's like, what are you, nuts? And he starts to walk out. I'm leaving this place. And the big bodyguards get... There's no turn back right now. He signed on it. The guy's like panicking. Obviously, he takes all his cigarettes, chucks them in the garbage. His life starts turning around. One day, he's going back from work, and he's supposed to go to his daughter's recital, and he's stuck in traffic, and everyone's honking, and he's like so hot outside. He's like so frustrated. He opens up his glove compartment, and he sees like two cigarettes that he never threw out, sitting right in front of him. He takes one of them in his mouth. He's like, I can't. And he throws it out the window. I can't do it. And then like another half hour, he missed the recital, right? It's over. And he just takes a second cigarette out, and he pushes the lighter button, takes a quick puff, and he starts to cough, he throws it out, I can't do this. He gets home an hour later, and he gets a phone call when he walks in. Mr. Jones, your wife's with us. You can come pick her up at the Quitters Incorporated office. He goes in there, he shows up, his wife's in the room, 10 seconds worth, never smoked again. If a person believed, if you believe that when your actions that you do has immediate consequences, if you actually thought for a second, Lashon Hara, imagine the scene, Lashon Hara, you see Lashon Hara and your tongue starts to blister immediately. And it's sore for like a day afterwards. So we never see Lashon Hara ever again. It'd be so obvious to us, so clear to us. But we don't live in a world like that anymore. Back then, you saw Lashon Hara, you got saras. You were immediately afflicted. It was so easy to see God all around you. You'd have to be crazy to miss it. We don't have it anymore. Wake up in the mornings, you don't feel connection to God. You know why? There's no base of mikdash anymore. Wake up in the morning, you don't want to put your tefillin on. No base of mikdash. You don't want to learn Torah. You don't want to be a baal ches. You don't want to help your parents out. It's all because of no base of mikdash anymore. Yeah.
And let's just say someone doesn't give the base of mikdash to the connection. What's the
excuse? No, it's good. There's certain in everywhere in life. Everyone has a free choice to see what they want to see, not what they don't want. It's up to them, for sure. But the amount of ease that they had back then is just a different ballgame. 100% correct. People in our history have done things wrong, even while the Beis Hamikdash was going around. But if you can picture the difference between walking in somewhere and just seeing it with such clarity and just hearing about it and never experiencing it besides that, it's a different ballgame. And what now is, you know, again, I'm not taking a poll about most youth that we know or in this room here, but I bet you many of us in this room have experienced questions and doubts. Back then, it wouldn't be that way. There would be a few, maybe. It might still be hard. We don't want to get up, but we would. But now, sometimes we don't. And we're okay with that. Because we don't see immediate ramifications, repercussions of what we're doing. We don't see it. And you know why? Because of Tisha B'Av, we're gonna mourn the loss of a center of our faith. That if you would just show up and watch miracle after miracle happening in front of you, it would be a game changer. We don't have it anymore. We should feel a tremendous personal loss. Every question that we have, there's a student of mine one time, I remember he was getting married. He was an older student of mine. And he said to me, before I get married, I have so many questions about religion. How can I get married right now? And I felt like, you know, a guy 25 years old, he's not sure if even if he believes in a God, he's getting married. How is he going to raise his kids? What do you tell them? We're stuck. We're at a serious loss right now. Well, I just think he's not around anymore. So we have ideas in the Sinaschinam. We committed the three big crimes. The Gemara in the Darm, on the Pei Aleph and Aleph, has the following psak, the following statement made based on the Navi. We don't have any more Beis Hamikdash because we didn't, it says, Lo Barchu B'Tchila. We didn't make brachos on Limud Torah. We were learning. We were doing things positively. So much so that the Rabbanim couldn't figure out what we were doing wrong until Hashem himself gave us the answer, and the Gemara in the Darm says, Shelo Barchu B'Torah Tchila. We didn't make a bracha on Torah first. That's why we were learning Torah. We didn't make a bracha, so it's gone from us now? We lost the Beis Hamikdash for that reason? It sounds pretty extreme. So I saw three different answers, and one of them I want to highlight, but I'll just focus on this, mention the other ones very, very briefly. The one shot is, that what is a bracha? What's the point of a bracha?
Appreciation.
Good.
Permission
could be for certain things like food. Something with bracha worthy to you. Or not. Is it worthy of a bracha? Learning Torah without a bracha means you don't feel the Torah is bracha worthy. So therefore, if it's not bracha worthy, then you're basically putting down God's Torah. If you don't like his Torah, so that's a pretty strong thing. Even if you learn the Torah, but you don't want to learn the Torah, it's a pretty serious thing. Yeah.
Is it because they forgot or they just
they didn't forget, but it just didn't matter to them enough.
They purposely didn't say.
Yeah, it wasn't on their radar for things that were worthy of making brachas on. Yeah, Ezra. They may even have intellectual curiosity. Could be even. Maybe they enjoyed it. So it's like Sudoku. It's like a fun, you know, puzzle they want to figure out. Gemara also is very intellectually stimulating. There are people you should know who aren't Jewish who learn Daf Yomi or learn Gemara. In Japan or China, I forget which one it is. Japan, maybe Korea. One of those places. And it sounds like I'm a racist. I don't mean to be just putting them all in the same category. I don't remember which it was, but there is a place out there somewhere in the Orient that they learn Talmud. They learn Talmud as part of their school curriculum. Trains you how to think a little bit. But they didn't see it as a godly work. So that's one shot people bring down. Shot number two. This one I think is maybe the most important one. I think for us particularly it's the most important one. What's the first bracha on Birchas HaTorah? How does it go?
I don't know.
So no, excellent, good. I'm talking about, okay, good. Oh, excellent, excellent. That's true. You're all correct when it comes to Birchas HaTorah. I'm talking about on the Torah itself. But you're absolutely correct. When you make a bracha on the Torah itself. Asher Bachar Banu. I don't know that song, but I know the words. I don't know the song. I don't know that song.
Loud and clear.
I don't know it. At the end, though, I want to lock arms and sing it with you, but I don't know the song right now. I don't know. Yeah, you'll teach it to us. Okay, you'll teach it to us. But not yet. We'll get to it. Bachar Banu means. Bachar Banu is that we're chosen. Look around the world. Who here feels chosen to be a Jew? You walk around the world. Oh, I'm so lucky to be a Jew. How many of us, you know, take our kippahs off when we feel like uncomfortable in certain areas? Or how many of us will be, you know, we daven. You could daven. Anyone here ever daven in the airport beforehand?
Yes.
How many of us have been embarrassed? I've been embarrassed. I know for myself personally. You know, you kind of go somewhere, and I put my talisman filling on, say I'm going on recruiting. So we go like early in the morning somewhere, and I can't daven in a minute, and I'm about to get on the plane. So I'll go into the corner by some gate, hope nobody sees me.
Find the escalator.
Yeah, somewhere where I may take my phone out as if I'm like, you know, I'm wearing a cape and a horn, but if I have my phone out, it's normal, I guess. But, you know, people are looking at you. Who here, and I say, you know, right next to me, there's a Muslim guy. Who puts out his rug with great honor, and he starts to bow, do his thing over there, and I'm sitting trying to hide. Are we proud? Bachar Banu, are we proud that we're Jewish? Most of us are not so proud. We feel proud about that. I'll tell you what it means to be proud of being a Jew. We wrote this on Eibschitz. They tell a story one time. We wrote this on Eibschitz. So he was a big Talmud Chacham, one of the Goli Ador. And he used to daven in shul, and next to him every day was a certain, you know, people had makom kavuas, and the next to him was a certain, one of the big members of his community would daven right next to him. And after davening next to him, he started listening to his daven, he noticed something off. That every single morning he listened to his tefillah brachas ha-shachar, and Rav Yonatan Eibschitz was forgetting a bracha every single day. He forgot to say the words, shlo asani goy. And he thought maybe he misheard it the first time, or he just didn't hear it, he listened again. He didn't say shlo asani goy. And he started to, this guy asked people in the community, did anyone here ever listen to the davening of the Rav? They never noticed it, so he says, go speak to the Rav. So one day he finally gets the courage and he goes to Rav Yonatan Eibschitz and he says, Rabbi, I'm embarrassed to ask this question to you. Maybe I just mind my business, but I can't help but ask. You're my Rabbi. And you're not saying, oh, Birchas HaShachar. He's like, are you kidding me? Of course I do. He says, I listen to you in davening and you don't say, Shlo Asani Goy. You're like, you're right, I don't. He's like, what does that mean? How can I say it? He says, Sam, I'll tell you why. He says, every day I wake up in the morning, I look around me, wash my hands in the morning, I say, Alantes Adayim, say Asher Yatzar, and the first thing that I say is Shalom Asani Goy. You wait until davening to say it? How could you wait until davening to say Shalom Asani Goy? It's like the first thing out of my mouth every single day. Now, you and I, we just like go right through it, right? Question. Like what?
Like anything that connects.
Well, okay, excellent. Certain things we have say Shema, for example. We have Birchas Kriyas Shema. I mean, we have certain things. Back, you know, Maseches Brachos says back in the day, you used to make the brachos in the morning based on the actions they were doing. When they put their shoes on, they would make the bracha on when they sit up, their, you know, they open their eyes up, they say, Pokeach Ivrim. They straighten their back, they say, okay, every morning, it wasn't in tefillah in the morning. It was each thing. So we nowadays put it all together in the morning blessings. We do. But he couldn't wait to say shalom to the goy until he got to shul. He can't be alive for a half hour and not thank God that he's a Jew. It's impossible for him. For us, the problem for us is that we don't really feel that. As a matter of fact, many of us, maybe picture that. I've heard this story before. I don't know if it's true or not true, but pretend one time, or not you, but a friend of yours, you know, one time that they found out that his mother, you know, his mother's mother had converted, but she converted through the conservative, you know, movement, and it wasn't a proper conversion, let's say. It was a reform movement, whatever, something went wrong in the conversion, which means the kid himself isn't Jewish. How many people, let's say that happened, God forbid, to you? Would you think twice before you made sure you went through the conversion? Maybe you're like, one second, I'm not Jewish? So that means that, you know, can I have a day or two to think about? Can I, like, figure this out later on, maybe a week from now we'll talk about it. I have something that I haven't done yet I'm maybe interested in trying a little bit of before I decide. So that's maybe some of us would think that. Maybe. Shlosh Ani Goy means like, why would I ever want anything other than being as close to God as possible? I'm the luckiest guy in the world. The luckiest guy. Bilam HaRasha, we're told, saddles his own donkey. The Rashi in 2 weeks ago's Parsha says, Bilam HaRasha, he says, you Rasha, Avram already saddled his donkey before you saddled your donkey. What does that mean? Is this like a Olympic Tanakh race? Who saddled donkeys first? Who cares? Moshe Feinstein says the following thing. You know what Bilam was saddling his donkey for? He was trying to show Hashem, you know how excited I am to curse Jewish people? Are they as excited to worship you as I am to curse them? Because if they're not, it means there's an excitement in the world that they don't share. If someone goes to work, and they're excited to go to work and to do their job, you're not excited as you, them to go daven in the morning? There's a fervor that you don't share. Imagine now, forget about someone else. Imagine you and you. Imagine if it's you versus you. How excited are you to, anyone here is a soccer fan? Anyone soccer fan? You're a soccer fan? So the World Cup, you follow the World Cup a little bit now? Are you following it all? So imagine, the World Cup right now, it's a good time, it's a convenient time. But let's say it was an inconvenient time. In order to catch the full game, we know from Yeshiva, we see all the time, guys want to stay up and they want to watch a football game. They wake up at 3 in the morning to catch one of the third, you know, the Monday night football games, 3 in the morning to make sure they don't miss their favorite team's football game. It's week 3. It's a big game. They might be 2-1 instead of 1-2. It's a big game over here. They wake up at 3 in the morning. But the problem is, when they don't wake up for Minyan 2 weeks later on a regular Sunday or Monday, forget about someone else having excitement levels that they can't match. What happens when you have excitement levels that you can't match? You're excited about everything else but religion. Who here wants to be a mediocre father one day? Mediocre lawyer? Mediocre? You want to be? Oh, you're just moving your hand. Okay, fine. Thank God. Who here is okay being a mediocre Jew? I imagine many of us are. Mediocre Jew. I'm okay with it, right? I do my stuff. I check the boxes. I put tefillin on. Or my tzitzis. Chas. Many people, though, are not chasing it. They're fine with it. Mediocrity is fine for being a Jew. But there's nowhere else in your life that you're okay with mediocrity. Nowhere. So why, when it comes to connecting to God, are we okay with mediocrity? And you put anything else you want out there. Parent, spouse, career man, everything. Since when would you ever want mediocrity? Nowhere else, except for religion. Because we're not proud. We don't feel we're chosen, that we're lucky. The story of Nachum Persavitz, who was one of the Rebbeim and the Rishivas in Mir Yeshiva back in the day, he had a Talmud of his that was a tremendous, tremendous master. He would learn all hours of the night. But he happened to have a problem. He couldn't wake up for Minyan in the morning. He couldn't get up. He went up at 2 in the morning. He just never got up for Minyan in the morning. Spoke to him about it. Nothing worked. Couldn't do it. Okay? Finally, after 3 years of being in Yeshiva and being one of the top guys in the Shir, he went to his Rebbe. He said, Rebbe, I'm going back home right now. I want a bracha. He says, I give you a bracha, you should be matzliach. When are you leaving? I said, I wake up here at 5 in the morning. My flight is in a few hours. You know, tomorrow morning, 5 in the morning, to wake up, and I can have my flight afterwards.
Are you going to make the flight?
5 in the morning is when they had to wake up for the flight. Oh, so 1 second. One second. Told you already? Rav Nachum, when he left the room, he went to a corner and he started to daven to Kodesh Baruch Hu. Please let him miss his flight. Because if he goes to Shemayim one day and he makes the flight, he doesn't have to answer for the fact that he had enough passion and energy to wake up for a flight, but he couldn't wake up for morning davening with you. Please let him miss the flight. And the story goes, he missed the flight. So at least in Shemayim, he's equal. At least he's equal in Shemayim. He's bad in both of them. But if he was good in one and bad in the other one, shame. I was learning with a guy one time. I was in yeshiva a long time before. And he when he went home, he had this, back in the day, it was called, I don't know if they have Skype still. Do you use Skype still or no? Okay, so we had a chavrus over Skype. And I never like saw my Talmud's room before when he was growing up, his high school room. So I'm learning with him now. He did great in yeshiva. We're learning this now. He's all the sermons based manager. I see on the back of the wall through Skype, I see there's like a wristband hanging on the wall. So I said, Jeff, I said, what's up with that wristband? What is that? He goes to me, oh, the wristband? He goes, yes. Quentin Richardson says on the Q24, he's a player for the Knicks back in the day, before your time. Otherwise, you'd be 24. Like, as a new number, it'd be 24. I said, where'd you get it? You bought it in like the local, the Madison Square Garden store over there? He goes, chas. Yeah, I was waiting right by the tunnel. He chucked that thing and I snagged it from some like little girl. I grabbed it. I said, have you washed it since then? He goes, wash it? Why would I wash it? It's game worn. So I said, hey, Jeff, what would happen if you know... You know, when I play ball, I wear a Nachman keeper, right?
Yeah.
What would happen if I at the end of a game, and the pants, and the runner over here, if I at the end of the game, I took my keeper, schwitzy keeper, and I chucked at you? Would you grab it? What's that?
After
Sarah. After Sarah. What does that mean? Sarah tournament, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah. Would you grab it? He goes to me, oh, Rebbe, that's like disgusting, like you're sweating. I said, you took this guy's wristband, you wouldn't take my keeper? What does he have that I don't have besides diseases? What does he have that I don't have?
Whoa.
Maybe I've never checked. You're right. It's true. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe he doesn't. Because you know, because you value him more than you value me. You value. What does he do well? And by the way, I love sports. I'm the biggest sports fan. I'm not the biggest, maybe, but I'm a big sports fan. I love playing ball. But I also know that you know, like the guys that were celebrating play ball. Most of them are not like the most upstanding citizens. They don't usually have the most faithful marriages. You're not usually, you know, so they usually have fathered children from more than one person. Why is his wristband more than my keeper's worth to you? Because our priorities are a little bit off. We don't value the things which we're valuing in life. And therefore we go through life appreciating a great athlete, and he, by the way, he's very talented. More than you appreciate your Rebbe. If you get a chance to meet Rebbe Rich, spend a day with him, or spend a day with, you pick whatever role model athletic guy that you want. You know, it's pretty hard, it's a hard one to you know, we lose that one. You know, 100 out of 100 times, probably. Our priorities are a little bit off. I'll say one last point, and then we'll stop. See? our greatest loss. The base mission not being here, our greatest loss is that we don't value ourselves. We don't value our Torah. We don't value Beis HaMikdash. You know, so much of the, if the choice was given right now, basically, should come, we leave our lives back there and we stay here forever. We probably have to think twice before we chose, yeah, I want that right now. But there are some people in the world who actually get it. And I'll tell you this last story and then I'll stop. There was a Pesach Magazine article. It was a number of years ago. I don't know if Pesach Magazine even is. But it's basically a Jewish weekly that comes out. And then an article one time, the following story came up. Right after 9/11, they had, after the terror attacks, they had every plane, maybe they still do, I don't know, every plane had staffed in it an air marshal. And the air marshals, you didn't know who they were usually. They were kind of like hidden among the crowd, but you know, sometimes you can see the big guy, you know, he's walking around, he's got a nice haircut, he's tucked in, he's looking around a lot. It's probably the guy. So one time there was this big Rav, you know, big white beard, sitting on the plane next to the air marshal. Big guy, strong guy. They had to talk over the course of the flight. Finally, when the flight lands, they both go to get their bags. So the rabbi says to the air marshal, I can't believe it. They make you wait here for your bags like everyone else? He's like, what are you talking about? He's like, you know, the air marshal. Like, you're the air marshal. They make you wait here? I'm not the air marshal. I guess I'm just a regular... I mean, I eat well and work out a little bit. That's true, but, you know, but... I'm not air marshal. I'm a regular passenger. I'm just catching my flight so I can see my mother. You know, she lives here. He's like... The rabbi says, I can't believe it, you know. The entire flight, I felt so much more safe and secure... So the next one I thought was the air marshal. I can't believe that you're not the air marshal. The guy says back to the rabbi, it's so funny, rabbi, that you say that. I felt the same way sitting next to you. I felt so safe and secure knowing you're on my flight. Sometimes you think about, you know, people know Asher Bachar Banu. They understand that we're chosen. The world at large can see sometimes. But we don't feel it. And one of the main reasons we don't feel it is because the Beis HaMikdash isn't here anymore. Had it been here, there'd be nations sending korbanos for us to offer on their behalf. And it's true, there'll still be questions that we might have occasionally. But it's so much easier to find the answers and just to see with our own two eyes. So in 2 weeks from now, we're going to be sitting down, a little less than 2 weeks from now, on the floor. And we're going to be mourning, we're going to be crying. If you've ever had a question in your life about religion, then you should cry. Because that wouldn't be the same level of question anymore. And if you ever wore a hat instead of your kippah out and about, because you don't want anyone to know, or you ever had to look around you, you know, certain people looking around you, you're diving in the airport because you're embarrassed a little bit, then this Tisha B'Av means more to you than it ever should have beforehand. Because it means that the same problem that happened to our ancestors, Asher Bachar Banu, that's the first bracha we make. They just didn't feel it, and neither do we sometimes. I'll give you a bracha. The Mishnah Perkei Avos says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a great gift. He gave us a Kli Chemda. He gave us a beautiful gift called the Torah. And more than he gave us a gift, that he told us he gave us a great gift. If someone gives you a gift, and then later on they say to you, by the way, I'll tell you, no, this is the best gift that you ever asked for in the world. It's a very special thing. Hashem gave us the gift, and he told us, I gave you a great gift. We should marry you on a program here in Israel. You came because you love to be in Eretz Yisrael, I assume, and you want a great time with friends and great Rebbeim. You should merit to have the strength of character. So this Tisha B'Av particularly, to understand what it means, Asher Bachar Banu, and to understand the loss that we don't have that with us anymore. Mr. Hashem, in 2 weeks from now, maybe I hope to see you by the Old City, walking, to celebrate the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. Shlishi, Meri Yameinu, Amen.